Welcome to Read Comics Podcast.
Number 14.
This is Florence.
And Marty.
And Jason.
And Susie.
Yay!
Susie via Skype.
Yes.
Yeah.
And right before we started, Susie said that she had read something very interesting on Neil Gaiman's blog, and she's going to tell us about it now. We still don't know what it is. It's a surprise.
This might be the very first Read Comics like breaking news headline ever, because it just so happened that like this was posted 13 minutes ago on his blog. And it is a press release, not by him, but by somebody. He saw it and he thought it was cool. So the important part is that anticipation, I don't know what exactly that is, some kind of organization or company, because it's capitalized. Anticipation is delighted to announce that a special category Hugo Award will be given at the 67th World Science Fiction Convention to honor works in which illustrations are integral to the movement of the plot, whether or not text is present. This special category Hugo, to be called Best Graphic Story, will cover any science fiction or fantasy narrative in graphic form appearing for the first time in 2008. It may potentially be ratified as an annual award in the WSFS business meeting at the convention in August of 2009, which basically means the Hugos released this year will be giving out awards that could very well apply to comics.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, breaking news done.
So have comics won Hugo Awards before? Like in
not
other categories?
That's a really good question. I feel like The Watchmen did. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I have no idea. I know that when Neil Gaiman, during the run of Sandman, he won a World Fantasy Award, which is not a Hugo Award, but it's very prestigious. And it was the first time that a comic book ever won that, and it was for an issue of Sandman. It was
The
Shakespeare one. And then it caused such an uproar that a comic book won it, they ratified the rules to make sure that no comic book would ever win it ever again.
Oh my god.
It caused an uproar.
So now the Hugo Awards have leapfrogged them and made it legitimate.
Yes, at least for this year.
Well, and they're giving it its own category, which I think, you know, that's what they should have done with the World Fantasy Award, is just said,
yeah,
hey, we've got a new category.
Well, and that's what the Oscars did after Beauty and the Beast got nominated for Best Picture.
Mm.
Well, it actually took them a couple of years, but now there's Best Animated Feature Film.
Which is interesting because I've heard rumors that WALL-E might be submitted for the best feature film instead of the best animated film category.
Well, and that is within the rights of the producers to do. That doesn't necessarily mean that it will get even a nomination. But
I think the impression I got was that they were trying to get out of the animated ghetto and be considered competitive with the mainstream movies.
Which, honestly, that's the best movie I've seen all year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of which, before we started, I was telling Marty and Florence that I had made some of my friends, I made their head explode with a statement last night and at work and stuff, and I said, you know what, I'll save this for the podcast.
So here we are, just
outrageous.
waiting for my head to explode.
Here is what it is. I saw Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull this week, and I enjoyed it more than The Dark Knight.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
So what you meant to say was that we'll all just have our opinions of you lowered a couple notches.
No, well, see, I actually, people were angry with me when I made that statement.
Wow.
There really is a lot of, like, overwhelming support for The Dark Knight.
Apparently, The Dark Knight can, like, cure blindness and make the lame walk. And apparently, if you express anything other than undying devotion to The Dark Knight, you are a godless pinko commie.
You will get to ascend with everyone else.
Who hates America.
Yes. Okay.
I feel like I can't comment because I haven't seen the latest Indiana Jones movie. I did like The Dark Knight a whole lot. But, it's not one of those things where I, like, sat around bouncing up and down, like, I love this, I'm having so much fun with this.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see somebody enjoying some other movie more than they enjoyed that. I thought it was a really good movie.
Well, and Marty just said that WALL-E was the best thing he had seen this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think WALL-E was better than Dark Knight.
I definitely had more fun at other movies than I did at Dark Knight. But that may have had to do with the fact that I desperately had to go to the bathroom for the most of, like, the movie.
Aww.
Well, and it isn't to say that I don't think that The Dark Knight was well made.
Mm-hmm.
I think cinematically it was a well-crafted film, although a lot of the techniques I didn't find all that. It was well-crafted. I didn't think it was groundbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, it was an action movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was anything in there that hasn't been done in other action movies.
Like,
I thought that
brand new thing.
A lot of the performances were really good. I thought Heath Ledger did a great job playing a homicidal maniac. I'm not sure who he was supposed to be.
Jason doesn't think that Heath Ledger played the Joker.
No, I don't think he played the Joker. I think he played a guy with clown makeup who killed people.
I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast
yet. Point.
I thought that,
yeah, I've seen it too.
You know, that obviously there are a bunch of different versions of the Joker, and I felt like this one was close enough that, you know, it could be, it was a plausible Joker.
Yeah. It was not incompatible with my idea of the Joker.
Yeah, it's funny, like, I've got a couple of different, like, images in my mind of who and what he is, and one of them is, you know, the really, really scary guy who looks like a clown but is going to kill you, and then there's, the more theatrical kind of one, like, from the animated series, where he's still crazy, but he feels a little less dangerous, and he feels more, like, over the top, like he's just putting on a show.
Well, and that's always been the Joker to me, is that he's not just a...
homicidal maniac.
Homicidal maniac who is... Well, in this, he was, like, Batman is order, and the Joker is chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't predict what the Joker is going to do. Which, for me, that is not necessarily the case. That you can play to the Joker's insanity sometimes, where he is all about the theatricality of it. You know? And they touched on that a little with this, but, you know, they're also kind of... well, for one thing, the boats. I thought that they kind of screwed up the boats. Because that wouldn't be a Joker thing... Come on, two boats, two switches, Two-Face. That would have been a Two-Face thing.
Yeah.
But, like, the Joker may not kill you if it's funnier to not kill you.
That's true. I can see that, you know, the whole tradition of the bang and the little...
Exactly,
flag.
Yeah.
The gun,
you know,
bang, yeah.
Fire the gun and the thing comes out and goes bang. And
then, you know,
then he might, you know... kill you with.
There have been things like, you know, the Killing Joke and other interpretations of the Joker where he is just really, really crazy and really, really dangerous.
That's true.
And I thought that, like, past performances of the Joker have lacked the danger.
I agree.
So,
well, the Joker that's in my mind is the one who shot, you know, shot Barbara and turned into the Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the flashbacks of just him showing up at the door and shooting you. You know,
but again,
no
he
reason.
Was very, very theatrical in that case too. You know, I mean, he
and it definitely was. He was planning to shoot Batgirl. He didn't even know it was Batgirl. It was just whoever opened the door.
Yeah.
So, but that's my take on it. And you know, then there are the other issues that I had with the movie, like Batman's voice.
Yes, Batman's voice was very silly and unnecessary.
And his giant head.
I had, like, issues with that and with Batman Begins. Just, like, I don't think there needs to be any connection between these new movies and the old movies. And I thought that's how they were trying to connect it, was with the raspy voice.
Oh.
Which, that isn't anything like it. And the really big rubber suit. Even though it was a different big rubber suit, but it was still a big rubber suit.
But...
And I just felt like that took me more out of the movie. Because I'm like, oh, they're referencing the old movies. Okay.
Hmm.
But, you know, I've yet to see anybody really pull off a bat suit.
Yeah.
A real live person pull off a bat suit.
Well, the way I always understood the bat suit, the way Dad explained it, was that it was silk or something. That was, like,
yeah,
some incredibly flexible, you know, acrobatics type of outfit, not an armor
suit. Well, we're seeing the beginning. You know, this is still the Batman Begins. You know, this is still him evolving the suit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and, you know, I mean, in the comics, I don't know that they've talked too much about the technology of the suit and stuff. I mean, it has evolved over the years. It's cloth, it's armor, it's this, it's that, you know.
Sure.
And
I think this day and age, it's probably armor. I think maybe the old school was more of an acrobatics kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
where flexibility and agility was much more important.
Uh-huh. Well, it was a very Silver Age and Golden Age thing I've noticed is to explain everything about the character, like what they're wearing, what kind of material it is, what's in every pocket. Like, that's a very Golden Silver Age kind of thing.
That's interesting, too, because, yeah, I even remember the backstory about the silk was that, like, he was like a Boy Scout equivalent or something, and he had made it himself, and all the utility belt stuff, like, came out of this whole scout thing. Yeah.
I am glad that they've sort of shied away from the utility belt in this series, because, yeah, like, just the constant pulling stuff out of the utility belt always was silly to me.
Yeah. Oh,
but
did you see the,
Everyone needs a bat shark repellent.
Did you see the animated movie of shorts that connects the first, the Batman Begins to the...
Not yet, no.
I haven't seen it yet either. Gotham Knights.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we watched it.
Was that in the box we just sent you?
No.
I'll have to look for it again then.
Okay.
But it's like, I don't know. I don't think it really enhanced anything to me.
No, it was completely unnecessary to...
Yeah, it was just kind of like, well, we put the character in this kind of bind, how is he going to get out of it? Well, conveniently he has bat shark repellent or whatever, or, you know, gas mask or, you know, that kind of thing. It felt very much like a Deus Machina, but less complex.
Did you guys read the my article on Space Circuses? Well, I know Susie did.
Yes.
But did you guys see the panels with
Batman
and Robin in the circus?
I don't think I saw that.
It didn't seem like they were actually in space. I mean, it just seemed like they were
in
the circus.
Yeah, they were just in a circus. And they were, like, jumping through hoops of fire. And,
well, I mean, there is the whole circus aspect to Robin's origin.
Sure, yeah.
You know, I mean, the Flying Graysons.
Oh, sure,
and
yeah.
One of the villains is a clown.
Hmm.
You know? So I've always kind of felt that Batman is the superhero that lends itself most into being turned into an opera. I think we mentioned that in one of the first podcasts. Batman the opera.
Oh, you know, I saw like a clip from a Batman Beyond episode where they did like the kid who's doing Batman. Like, took Bruce out to Batman the Musical, and they did this, and there was, like, a staged version, the missions of the Batman, and they were all singing, and it was very silly, and I liked it.
What was that an episode of?
Batman Beyond.
It was, Batman Beyond.
That was the futuristic, the Batman set, like, 50 years.
50 years in the future, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bruce is,
but
how old is Bruce?
50 years older than he was.
So, 190! No.
Yeah.
So
is this
in the kind of the Paul Dini, Bruce Timm animated DC universe. So it's 15 years after anything that's in the present, basically.
But it's basically Batman with lots of future tech.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and a teenager.
But this was an animated cartoon?
Yeah,
like,
for several years.
Yeah, it looks good.
Did they ever have Robin on that?
Sorry, yeah.
Did they ever say what happened?
I didn't watch that much of it.
To Robin?
I just happened to catch this.
I mean, Batman's an old man, and he kind of plays the oracle for the new teenage Batman.
He's the mentor. He's kind of old and hunched over because he's been broken a lot.
Yeah. I wonder if Robin went on to be Darkwing in this scenario, and then...
He wasn't a duck,
no, sorry.
So.
I always knew this. Call Robin a duck. Yeah.
Yeah. That would have been funny, though. I don't know if he did. I know, though, when they did the Justice League cartoon that came Like, they did that after Batman Beyond was over in the very last episode of the Justice League. I think they put it, you know, 60 years into the future and tied in together a whole bunch of stuff for Batman Beyond and revealed stuff.
Has Brave and Bold started yet? Do you know?
No idea.
Brave and Bold
probably
is the new
not.
Batman animated cartoon for the WB or whatever it's called now.
Something, yeah. There is a current Batman cartoon called The Batman.
Oh, no, that ended.
Oh, it did?
Yep. Yep, the
okay.
final season was last spring, I think, along with the Legion of the Superheroes. That ended as well.
Oh, yeah, I never really watched that one.
Did you watch it, Jason?
I saw a few episodes. It was very anime-esque, kind of like
yeah.
the Teen Titans. Teen Titans
I
Go.
That's
they
the best
had,
theme song.
Catwoman in basically her current costume with like the aviator mask and stuff. But that was all I really remember about it.
Yeah, all I know about Teen Titans is the theme song.
By
yeah, which
what,
is awesome.
What's their name? The band?
Puffy
AmiYumi. The first time I ever saw that band's name, I think I was on a subway train in New York, and I thought that this was some band that was, like, unique to, like, the Spanish language channels in New York or something, because I'm like, that can't be real. But they did Teen Titans Go, so there you go. Anyway,
I did find our copy of the Batman Gotham Knight, so that will go in the next package, which will be a little while.
Susie's calling. She must have gotten disconnected.
Oh, let's answer it.
It was abrupt.
Hello?
Hey, you guys lost me.
Okay.
We're back.
I don't think you
Yay.
Missed anything.
Yeah, move on.
So, what were you saying?
Oh, I was just telling Susie that she can expect the Batman Gotham Knight animated movie in the next box.
Yay!
So,
we were going to talk about what we've been reading a little bit. Marty, I guess, has lots of stuff he has to read, or
it's
has
not,
been reading.
Yeah, it's not that much, really. I finished the second and third Fear Agent comics and reviewed those on the site yesterday.
Fear Agent is an awesome comic.
I was not taken with it in my reading the first half of the first one.
Have you read Fear Agent, Susie?
No.
I like it. I like it a lot. I heard so many good things about it on different podcasts. And do you know why you're able to read these right now, Marty?
No.
Because I requested that the library get them.
Yay!
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Congratulations.
The library had not did not have Fear Agent, and I did the little request that we buy a book thing on their form.
We should do that.
Fear
more.
Agent, and
yeah,
I got a message saying, okay, they're ordered. And so
wow.
they got the first three, and number four is still on hold. And I think I'm first on the list, and you're second.
I might be third.
Really?
I think I'm third, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm definitely first, because one of the things that you can do when they get stuff that you're interested in is you can request that they put
it
on.
Nice.
Yeah, reserved for you.
That's
so
very
you
cool.
get to be at the top of the list.
Well, it's, I mean, the third one is the entire thing is a flashback. And the second one ended in a cliffhanger. So I'm still, like, you know, like, on the edge of that cliff going, what's going to happen?
So the third one didn't actually resolve the cliffhanger
Nothing.
From the second one?
Not even, not at all.
Wow.
And so I was looking on, I mean, I said this in the review, but basically the numbering is all weird. So the third, you know, trade has issues that were not even originally numbered. But then Dark Horse, like, kind of retroactively numbered them and started the numbering, you know, after that. But so, I mean, it's like four issues that are just a flashback and have their own arc. And then, but so between the second and the third trade, there's a missing issue. And there's another issue that is apparently also missing after this four-issue arc that's unrelated. And those two are collected in a different trade that is not numbered. So, it's completely...
You could just go get the single issues.
Yeah, I could. And or I could try and find that trade.
Florence,
I mean, that
appears to be opposed to that idea.
She's trying not to collect. It's...
And, well, naturally, so, yeah. I can segue into the thing that I'm totally addicted to that I just switched over to single issues, which is Walking Dead. I've read all, yes, I've read all 8 trades, and now I must have more, even if it's piecemeal. So I was skipped ahead to, I think, issue 51, but the 8th trade ends with 48, so I've ordered the back issues for 49 and 50, and now I will just keep going as long as he goes, because I'm totally hooked.
Well, what did you think of issue 50?
Well, I didn't read issue 50. Issue 48 and issue 51.
Okay, all right. So I stopped with trade number 5. I could not bring myself to read trade number 6. We've talked about this. I get no joy from reading them. They're good, but I get no joy. It's too rough on my psyche to read them.
I mean, I should knock on wood, but it's been less painful for me lately than it was at first.
It's
like,
your soul
just
has died a little bit inside.
I think you're probably right.
Yeah, I pretty much decided not to read it because I didn't want that invading my brain. Because I
know
how addictive it is, and I don't know if I want to expose myself to it.
Okay, well, I'll let you know if it ever stops completely and I have the full series.
Well, and everyone was raving about issue 50 online and like going, oh, damn, you know. And
well, because issue 48, some big shit went down. So I don't know what else they would do in 50, but.
Well, and I went ahead and read 50. I read it at the source. I just stood there and read it. It takes about 3 minutes to read because there's very little dialogue. It's basically a... I don't know what happens in issue 51, but not a whole lot happens in issue 50.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because like I said, a lot happens in 48.
So,
well, we don't need to spoil anything, since Florence hasn't read it, and I will probably eventually read it as well.
Okay, we can put that over.
Oh. Sorry. All right.
Yeah,
Jason doesn't want to look at it because...
Well, it has...
It's true, it has scary things on the cover.
Yes.
Let's see, I have been reading... I got 2 things from the library. I finally renewed my library card.
Yay!
I got a little book called Embroideries, which was by Marjane Satrapi, who wrote Persepolis.
Yeah.
You finally saw that.
Ah, cool, yeah, I haven't seen it, but I've read both the volumes of Persepolis.
Wait, both volumes?
Yeah.
Is there a
Persepolis
second?
Is Persepolis and Chicken with Plums, right? The movie is...
Does the movie encompass both?
Is an abbreviated version of the 2 volumes.
Yes.
It's Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Okay.
Okay.
And I haven't seen it yet, but I've read both the volumes. And so I got this, Embroideries, and this was... it didn't have as much of a narrative. It wasn't her life story. It was just her sort of giving a glimpse of the women in her family and them sort of sitting together and gossiping and just interesting views on marriage and sex, and mostly marriage and sex. but it was very short and very good. But not quite as emotionally wrenching as Persepolis, which isn't a bad thing. And I also got the 4th volume of Ex Machina.
Oh!
Oh!
We want...
That's, but she...
No, I didn't buy it, though.
She got it from the library.
Yeah, okay.
And you guys could get them from the library here. They have them.
Really?
Up to volume 6.
Oh, my God.
Okay, that's your
job. So, I enjoyed the whole thing. I had, like, one, kind of thing that made me a little crazy, though.
Hmm.
It was, like, right within the first 4 issues, he has this phone conversation. I guess I'm going to spoil the fact that it is a phone conversation.
Oh my god.
Who's one of his junior staffers. And it takes place between her and him over the phone, and they're having this, like, political discussion, you know, as usual, because it's Ex Machina. But he's, you know, sitting around in his little basement at Chrissy Mansion where he does his stuff, and then she's in her bedroom, nude, but in a sheer top.
Wait, I feel like I've read this.
Maybe we have.
Anyway, so she's, like, and it just, it, there was really no need to have her, like, breasts exposed like that, unless they thought, you know, comic readers just couldn't handle 5 pages of political discussion about seeing some tits. Like, except it's at Ex Machina, all it is political discussions, and so, you know, if you've gotten this far, you'd think, like, they would have gotten over the lack of tits.
You know, I remember that vividly, but I don't remember the political discussion.
That's the thing. It's like, it's completely distracting. You know, and I could have almost, like, dismiss it as if they were trying to, like, symbolize some kind of, like, intimacy between the two characters, even though they weren't really romantically involved. I could sort of dismiss it, but the fact he drew tits completely wrong. Like,
there was one on the back and one on the front.
Tits. The nipples were just sort of pointed straight head on like headlights, and that's not how nipples work.
It's true.
They usually point down, sometimes they point up, but they don't, like, look you in the eye.
There's infinite variation, Susie.
Well, you know,
this is
on guys, they don't work at all.
For people who seem to, like, enjoy drying the human body, and yet every time it's like headlights.
You know, it's interesting that you're bringing this up. I was listening to last week's Around Comics today, and they were talking about male artists versus female artists and different styles, and they brought up Why the Last Man and whether or not someone who opened up Why the Last Man, and you win a prize!
You open it up and it starts, bell. It's the bell goes off. And
sorry about that.
That's okay, mine will probably go off later.
That was Florence's new iPhone.
Which I didn't have on your
time. But if you open up Why the Last Man and look at the art, do you know that it was done by a woman as opposed to a man? And one of the artists on this podcast was saying, yeah, I can totally tell that it was done by a woman as opposed to a man. And I started thinking, you know, how would someone tell? I mean, you could guess. You could say, oh, this is likely done by a woman as opposed to a man, and I'm wondering if certain anatomical things would be kind of giveaways. You know,
well,
do women more likely draw less exaggerated breasts than men do, or at least straight men do? Do,
wait, what?
Like, the most egregious, like, overly sexed artists I can think of are men, but then there's one or two, you know, women as well. Like, Jim Lee is not exactly accurately to the human form. A lot of people really love that. He seems like a cool guy. And then there's, like, Terry Dodson. But then Terry Dodson has somebody else named Dodson who works with him, who I'm pretty sure is female. So, and they work together, so.
Well,
I can't remember her name now.
I mean, I certainly don't think that there are no women who draw Barbie dolls. You know, I mean, I think that that's, you know, probably just as common. But I wonder if there's other factors as well.
Rachel Dodson.
What?
It's Rachel Dodson. That's who he usually works with.
So, they're probably related.
Mm-hmm.
Married, I would guess.
And
could be brother and sister.
Anyway, I mean, I think that, you know, there are probably other indicators, maybe, as well, like,
Well, and it's one of the things I noticed in Artist Alley at Wizard World, was that, you know, so many of the artists there, 95% of whom were male, had in their portfolios lots of boobs.
Mm-hmm.
Lots and lots of boobs.
Oh, yeah.
I'm kind of like, I'm getting a little tired of seeing the boobs.
Yeah.
I'm ready to look at some Marvel and DC comics that are actually published and, you know, they have to adhere to certain guidelines. you know, Power Girl and Emma Frost notwithstanding.
Yeah.
It's funny, I've seen some, like, response drawings by women, like, putting male characters in the exact same poses and styles of costumes as other, as, like, the female characters. They're really funny. I will try to find them and link them to you, Jason. You might enjoy them.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, it's very funny. I remember when there was that hubbub about the Mary Jane statue of her, like,
mm-hmm.
bending over with her thong out and washing Spider-Man's costume, how very erotic. they did the same thing. They didn't do a statue, but they did a drawing of Spider-Man in the same pose, only just wearing a mask and a little Speedo.
You know, it's funny you mentioned this, because I'm on a couple of mailing lists where people do alternate versions of superheroes. And there are similar things where it's Spider-Man wearing his mask and not really much else. And usually being, you know, anally raped by Dr. Octopus or something like that. These would be fan art things, I think, is, you know. Anyway.
I've heard about the fan art scene in Japan being, like, such a huge industry that some of the fanzines of the popular magazines are actually selling more than the popular titles. And
I've read that article, too.
And then they usually hire the people who...
Right, and, like, I think I must have sent you that article.
No,
it
might be.
Because it was, like, the comparison was, like, there's one girl doing stories about this very popular character who, in her, like, official incarnation is, like, a little girl, you know, just a cute little girl having feisty little girl adventures, and very innocent, and then this other person is doing the alternate, where she's a little bit older, and, you know, in sexual situations, and, like, going through angst, and all sorts of things. The comparison would be, like, if a alternate artist, who knows, maybe this is happening, was doing Peanuts, but as, like, 12-year-olds having sex and, like, angst and that kind
I think
and
that stuff is out there.
And it being more popular than Peanuts.
Right, well, yeah.
It's not more popular than Peanuts, but that stuff is definitely out there on the internet.
Well, I was going to say, it's like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
We all know that.
Indeed.
Although,
are you
more popular?
No, true.
Susie, do you know about, there was a Harry Potter fan art live journal that was a romance comic between Harry and Draco, but it was not so much stick figures as geometric shapes representing that, like, they had circles for heads and triangles for bodies.
Okay.
And, you know, you could tell it was Harry because he had dark hair with glasses and a scar, and you could tell it was Draco because he had blonde hair. And it had all the characters like that, and it they messed around and stuff, but clearly it wasn't X-rated because, you know, you can only do so much with a circle and a triangle. But, I don't remember what that's called, and I followed it for a while.
It doesn't surprise me, but I've not heard of that one.
Okay. I'll have to look that up. Oh, there's webcomics that I missed. There was a great gay romance webcomic called Boy Meets Boy that was a Keen Space comic. And I'm sure the archives are still out there. I'll have to find that and link you to it as well. But it just, oh, it was such a wonderful gay romance comic.
Aww.
I don't know if you enjoy reading gay romance stuff, but
it depends if it's well done, you know.
Yeah, this was very funny, and it had, you know, a nice supporting cast and everything.
Aww. Sounds cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot the other thing I've been reading.
Galaxy
is,
High? What?
I was loved basically the entire 90-issue run of Grant Morrison's Animal Man.
Oh, yeah.
And I've gone through about 14 issues now. It's pretty cool. Like, the first couple issues were very, like, straightforward 90s, or it's actually late 80s superhero thing, and then it started going really weird, and I liked it a lot better as it got weirder.
Like, how...
And I still
how...
had, like, 60 issues to go, so...
Well, they kind of started breaking the fourth wall a little bit, and...
Oh, yeah, it's already started doing that. And there was, like, one issue, like, pretty early on. It was, like, the first issue after, like, the straightforward arc of, like, where Wile E. Coyote is the Messiah.
What?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
And they start relating Animal Man... Well, they move Animal Man from kind of the mainstream DC universe into the Vertigo universe. I mean, it's still part of the DC universe... But it's a Vertigo comic, kind of like Swamp Thing and the Doom Patrol. And they actually start relating Animal Man to Swamp Thing in that Swamp Thing has this attachment to the green. You know, he's a nature elemental. And Animal Man is related to the red, which
like
is...
fire?
Well, like blood.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So, before we get too far off the...
I haven't started doing that yet. I'm only, like I said, about 14 issues in, and it's, like, it's 1989, so I don't know if Vertigo is even an imprint yet at this point.
Yeah.
But it's definitely going there. It's going the Vertigo direction.
Interesting. I wanted to just quickly throw out there, before we get too far off the fanfic genre, that Florence and I recently downloaded Brat Girl, which is a porno based on, you know, somehow set in Batman universe. I don't know how it's related, but
well, yeah, you know,
probably they're just costumes. I don't know.
There is a gay porn called Bat Dude and Throbin. It's from the mid 90s, and
is this a video or is this a comic?
No, it's a video, and the villains are the poker and the peeper and the French tickler. So, you know, there is a history of porn taking ideas from comics.
Anywhere
and,
they get them.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Edward Penis Hands and all that.
Yeah. Well, okay, so
I wonder if there are any other, you know, superhero specific porn. I mean, there must be.
Oh my god.
Oh,
there is a.
It has to be.
A just going back to excuse me, the gay aspect of it, and I'm sure there is a heterosexual aspect of it too, but there are gay fetish groups based around Lycra and superhero costumes and stuff.
Yeah.
They actually have big parties out in LA where you're supposed to come dressed as a superhero or a supervillain. Perhaps, but
with a flat.
Generally speaking, you are wearing Lycra.
Yeah. Zentai suits, they call them. Do you know about Zentai suits?
No.
Zentai suits are just like full body Lycra. They cover your face and like your entire body. I think generally they're pretty thin, so you can kind of see through them. But I mean, you can buy them on eBay for $10 because they're just like stretchy fabric. I was thinking that I would, like, you know, concoct some kind of superhero costume at some point out of one because, like, oh, $10. But I still haven't done it.
Nice.
Okay, so I have gotten distracted by the realization that with my new iPhone, maybe I can start reading webcomics like everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
So,
itty bitty tiny little screen.
Yeah, so we'll see. But I just tried to look up The Devil's Panties, which is a webcomic I discovered at Wizard World that I actually bought the first compilation that she had published and really, really enjoyed it. So I'd love to read more of her stuff, but I'm not seeing it really like on her website at all. I've just seen a blog, so I'll have to figure that out.
I would like to borrow that when you were done with it.
Was it not in your last box?
It might be on my shelf.
Ah, yes.
Because I have been wanting to read it.
Marty called dibs, but his shelf is completely out of control. So
my cup overfloweth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like my shelf of stuff from the library where I have put myself on a moratorium for checking out books aside from if it's something I've already requested that has now come in, I'll get that. But until I get through the ones I have, I need to really not check out anymore.
Yeah.
That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, Florence thinks that's a good idea for buying.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But what if there's a really good deal that you'll miss out on because...
Well,
there are no good deals that we're buying. We're buying the cover price.
Oh, wow.
But
yeah,
the thing that you know, strikes me is, like, what if something sells out and then you can't get it anymore?
And there's always trades in the library.
But not everything goes to trade.
There's eBay.
Yeah.
And the source ordering back issues, which they do for me all the time.
Yeah, but things don't. Not everything's available.
That's true.
With the back issue.
In fact, I have been trying to get the 2007 or 2008 Prism guide, and they haven't been able to get that for me.
Okay, it is possible that, that could happen in very rare instances. It's true. That's a risk we take, but it is unlikely in most cases.
Well, the other thing that I have from that I read this week is something that I borrowed from Jason, who had it out from the library.
And I have not read it yet. I've read the first issue in it, but I haven't read beyond that.
Oh, that's
it's
a good
Top 10
that.
Beyond the Farthest Precinct. So I've now read all of the top 10. And this was written by Paul DeFilippo, if that's how you pronounce his name. Who's another sci-fi author. I actually equate him very closely to Jonathan Lethem. They have similar writing styles in their fiction anyway, and they're both really well known for short stories, although I think Lethem has more full books. Paul DeFilippo probably has more short story collections. But this, it was good. I liked it. I thought, you know, like, some of the complaints that I've heard about it or I've read about it say that they don't like the writing as much, and I totally disagree. I thought the writing was just as good.
Did you feel like the characters were different than they had been previous?
Somewhat, but I think that there also had been time passed. So, like, there were characters that weren't in the other series, you know, any of the other comics, and the, you know, stuff that happened. I don't think nobody was super different. There might have been some pretty big differences, but I don't want to get into too much into detail because I know I'd be spoiling it for Jason. Because there was one thing that kind of bothered me, and
we'll talk about it after.
Yeah, I guess we'll talk about it later. Well, I'm just going to say it, because I don't think it's that big a spoiler, and it's not a big plot point. They basically can the
Chief. That happens at the end of the first issue.
That happens right away in the beginning. And it kind of bugged me, because, I mean, I could see why they did it in terms of plot. Like, that was fine. But then he's not a character anymore. I mean, they basically just wrote him off.
Really?
And, yeah, I mean...
Did they say why they did it?
Was the actor needed elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. So, and it bugged me because, I mean, that was one of the really interesting sort of aspects of it, was his, you know, gayness and how he was kind of hiding it. And, you know, it wasn't like a big plot
film wanted.
It wasn't a huge, you know, plot point, but it was something that I liked about the other books. And it just really wasn't, I mean, it was in this one, but only, you know, super briefly.
Well, we'll see what I think about it. I at the end of the first issue, I did notice it happened. That was kind of the cliffhanger, so to speak.
Yeah.
But, well, I've been reading way too many Ultimate comics. I've almost caught up with all of the Ultimate comics. And all checked out from the library. I just read the Ultimate Spider-Man Clone Saga, which was actually pretty good. You know, I'm enjoying these Ultimate comics. I'm enjoying them quite a bit. And it's definitely just an alternate history of the Marvel universe, you know? I don't think it's everything that is wrong with comics today, as someone had pointed out recently. But, you know, I could see where a new comics reader might decide, you know what, I'm going to follow Ultimate Spider-Man instead of Amazing Spider-Man and just, you know, go with that and You have Peter Parker as a high school student, which is actually pretty interesting. He freaks out quite a bit, but, you know, I think a high school student would be kind of freaking out a little bit. His mask gets taken off a lot. Like, he can't keep his mask on. Every time he gets overpowered by a villain, they rip his mask off. Every time he passes out and, like, he ends up being helped by the X-Men or the Fantastic Four, they take his mask off. And yeah, it's... But they're fun. They're fun. And apparently there is a big Ultimate Universe event that's going to be happening coming up very soon that a lot of people are looking forward to. So,
do you know anything about it?
I think it's called Ultimatum.
What's it gonna? I mean, what's the premise? Do you know?
I guess it kind of explains the whole Ultimate. Not really explains the whole Ultimate Universe, but it kind of
ties it together.
Or? Yeah, I guess everything's connected. It's every yeah.
I think I read like they were giving out a free issue.
Yeah, Ultimate Origins.
Something at Wizard World,
and this
I read
talks
it,
about
and it
that.
Made absolutely no sense to me, and I gave it away.
Ultimate Origins?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a free comic from the Marvel booth of Wizard World.
Yeah.
And you brought over one that I read kind of the end of. What was that?
Ultimate Galactus.
Ultimate Galactus. Which, so that in that, Galactus isn't a giant dude.
Nope, it's a bunch of, it's a hive mind, basically, of mechanical.
They look
beings.
Sort of insectoid, but they're bigger. Ships.
And they appear as a basically there are enough of them to form a ring around the planet Earth, and they destroy life. I mean, that's what its purpose is. It destroys life, not necessarily to feed, but because life is so repellent to it that it has to destroy it. That it views life in the way that a person might view a spider and have to kill it.
Do you know the premise of the Halo video game series?
No.
Pretty
much that?
It's similar, yeah. I mean, essentially the Halos are, and there's more than one, although you don't know this playing the first game, but
wait,
essentially,
there's a story?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
Halo?
I thought it was just stalking people in halls and jumping out and shooting them.
Yeah, I have really wanted... Actually, I saw the comic at the library and I didn't get it. I thought about it. But it's been, you know, there have been enough comics that there's a, you know, a trade collected and everything.
There's a World of Warcraft comic.
Yeah. Anyway, so the Halo story, it's pretty interesting. I mean, there is this life form that is, you know, like, so... you know, that it reproduces so fast and destroys so much that it's kind of like a virus. And, you know, any world that it's infected, you pretty much just have to destroy it. I mean, there's no, like, you know, there's no going back from that. And the Halos are just giant, just, you know, weapons that just destroy all physical life. So only, you know, AI survive after they go off. And essentially, they, you know, are triggered by this swarm or whatever it's called. I forget the name of it.
Swarm.
And if you know, they, you know, essentially, I forget if they have to be triggered in order to go off or if it's just the, you know, the presence of this swarm or whatever.
Wow.
If somebody who was really into it heard me talk about it, they would be probably really disappointed, but... I thought it was really interesting.
You failed.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm kind of disappointed to find out that there is more than just the wandering around shooting.
Yeah, I've only actually observed you guys playing it once, and that's my only exposure to it, and that's really, I thought that's all it was. It was like...
It's Pac-Man, basically.
Trigger first. That's it.
The main thing that turned me against it was that it is so difficult to be good your first try, and that's my criteria for liking a game, is whether I can feel like I'm awesome on the very first
nice.
Attempt.
Well, and then when you're playing against everyone else who has, you know,
played these types of games for dozens upon dozens of years. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So I came up with an idea for another comic that I want to do. I suppose I should finish the first comic. And I suppose I probably shouldn't just reveal my idea for a comic on a public podcast.
Okay, maybe after we hang up.
Yeah, that would probably be a good idea.
Really? You're not going to say?
I am going to have comics by Gay Lexicon.
Really?
Yes. I'm going to have them. I don't know who will draw them, but basically I will have, at the very least, full completed scripts for full issues by Gay Lexicon. Because, you know, I figure that there are going to be, hopefully, there will be contacts there that I can talk to about and stuff.
I think you should send that script in somewhere. I mean, or find someone.
I need to find someone to draw it, but I can see Image maybe publishing it, you know?
Well, actually, a friend of mine was at Wizard World for a day, and he hooked up with somebody who was going to be able to get his comic made. So it's not. Nothing's come of it yet, but. It's not impossible.
And Marty and I were reading about the Image submission guidelines and everything, and I mean, I think there they basically are like, do we think this is a sellable comic? And if they do, they'll publish it and take a, you know,
do
portion.
They need
but it's
just scripts, or do they need paid?
No,
that's what I was going to say.
You need your own team.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So you need to basically have finished stuff to send them, and they will print it and distribute it and promote it.
I think these people he met, they actually are capable of hooking writers up with artists. He mentioned the name Ronan. I haven't investigated it, but maybe one of us should.
Yeah, I mean, Susie's written a comic as well.
Have you?
I've written 2 issues of a comic, and I've got a concept, and I've just got to sit down again and write a few more issues.
I really enjoy it a lot.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to read it. You know,
you guys should send each other your comic, because then you could both read them.
This is true.
Yeah.
You know, Mike has that book, Drawing Pictures and, or no, Writing Pictures and Drawing Words. And
by Jessica Abel.
Yes, who did Life Sucks.
Which
you did buy it,
yeah.
Did you read it yet? Have you read it yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
Anyways, Mike bought the book, and we keep saying that we need to start doing lessons, but I think that the only way that it's going to work is if I buy my own copy to have, and we can get together to do the lessons, but, read the lessons
and then get together
and do them.
Yeah, I would love to do that, too.
So maybe we just need to all buy our own damn copy.
Yeah, I think we should.
So, Jason, is yours a superhero comic?
One of the one that I've already written about half of the first issue is a superhero comic. Marty and Florence Marty's right. I don't know if Florence has.
I don't think so.
It's the one I've told you about.
Yeah, you told me about it, but I don't think I've read it.
I have the first 12 pages and the last 2 or 3 pages of the first issue done, and then the new one, I just came up with this idea, and it's really not a new idea, but it's a twist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
mine's kind of a twist as well.
There are no original stories.
Nope.
So true.
But I don't think it's been done from this point of view yet, so.
Yeah.
All right, we're far enough into this podcast that I can say this out loud, because no one who listens to this this far through will actually know me. but I actually recorded a little snippet of a rap on Friday. I don't know why this is related at all. I guess it's about writing, but I wrote this rap about chess for woochess.com.
Nice.
Because it's whatever. It's dumb.
We will link to the video.
No, we won't.
Oh, come on.
We certainly will not.
Well, at least you weren't doing the chubby bunny thing. Although you probably
what even
would
is
love
that?
It.
Yeah,
it's,
I don't know what that is. What
it's
is
a
it?
YouTube thing where basically you say chubby bunny and then you stick a marshmallow in your mouth. And then you say chubby bunny and you stick another marshmallow in your mouth. And then you say chubby bunny and you keep sticking marshmallows in your mouth and saying chubby bunny and you video it and put it on YouTube. Ha 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 ha.
Wow.
I did that actually in
like
grade school.
But
sounds like what?
Not saying chubby bunny.
It's one of these YouTube memes that has come about, and you know, you can if you search for chubby bunny on YouTube, you'll find all these.
Okay.
And the reason why I found it was because there is a video caster, a video comic reviewer. He's known as Gay Comic Geek on YouTube. And he's really cute. And he lives in Florida and has a boyfriend. But he goes to conventions and he has costumes. He has a Robin costume. And the costume that he has that I really like is the Captain Marvel Jr. costume. Which, he looks really good in the Captain Marvel Jr. costume. Anyways, he did one of these Chubby Bunny videos. And it actually was kind of funny watching him stuff his mouth full of marshmallows and speaking through them. But he reviews comics as a video podcast on YouTube. And he's actually, it's pretty entertaining to listen to him.
What's he call himself again?
Gay Comic Geek.
Gay Comic Geek. See, we can link to that.
There we go. If we follow enough links, it'll take us to the chess wrap.
I don't want to say this, but I actually put it on my blog, so you can find it there.
Oh, and that reminds me of a webcomic I've been reading.
Yeah?
Has nothing to do with chubby bunnies, but it does have to do with chess.
Really?
It was somebody, we talked to the creator at Wizard World when we were going through Artist Alley. It's the Clockwork Game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and she's been posting like a page a week, so it's kind of frustrating how, because once you read through the whole, all the back pages, which is only like 20, you know, you're done for another week and then you have to wait and it's just a page. But it's really, it's very good. It's very, like, fine line, precise art. And it's telling a true story or her extrapolation of a true story of this guy in Austria who built a chess machine, but this is.
It's
like the
commonly known as the Mechanical Turk.
1770 or something. And he built this clockwork chess machine that was like beating everybody at chess. The reveal is eventually going to come forward that it's not what it seems, but I don't know what it is yet. But it's very cool. I like it.
You're not familiar with the story already?
I picked up actually a book called The Chess Machine. When I was at a Barnes & Noble like a year ago, I needed something to read. I was waiting for a friend to show up. We were going to see Ira Gillespie at the reading, but blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I picked that up and read the first chapter, and it seems to be based on the same story, but this is definitely a fiction novel, so I don't know if one has really anything to do with the other or not. But I don't want to say anything, so I don't want to give anything away to anybody else.
So,
who might be following along.
What's the name of it again?
The Clockwork Game.
Okay.
But so yeah, I've been reading that, and she gives little notes afterwards each page.
How
which
much?
Is almost like having a little running director's commentary.
How much is up for it right now?
I want to say maybe between 20 and 25 pages.
Okay, I'll have to check that out.
I'm pretty sure we bought that from her.
I think yeah.
Yeah.
I think you bought like the. It's not the completed one. It's sort of a preview. It's maybe the first 25 pages or so.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
One of the best things is when you realize that you haven't read one of your webcomics for a couple months, and then you have, like, several months worth of stuff queued up.
I know. I really love that, too.
It's like, oh, God, I haven't read something positive since, like, the beginning of summer. I can go back and read all of these.
Yeah, or I'm wearing the Freak Angel shirt right now.
I started reading that, too. I shouldn't say this, but I had a lot of free time at work. recently. I was like, stay glued to the computer, but not didn't have anything to do until the stuff came in.
Don't you work in a grocery store?
Clockwork, Game, and Freak Angels.
Freak Angels is so good.
I like it. I'm actually a little more like anxious to know what happens with Clockwork Game than with Freak Angels, though. It's weird, even though the other one seems like it should be more exciting.
Interesting.
But I think the art is beautiful on Freak Angels.
You know, I wonder if there's a chess web comic out there. Like, with chess pieces talking to each other.
Well, if there's not, there soon will.
Yeah.
There certainly could be.
What do chess pieces say to each other? Maybe they really like each other, and they are constantly being forced to take up arms against each other.
Don't make me hurt him again!
Fred, no!
I'm, for some reason, I'm envisioning it very similarly to that D&D webcomic. I can't remember what it's called. The one that that one of the other Jason Longwitz recommended to us.
The Order of the Stick?
Order of the Stick, yeah. For some reason, I'm seeing a chess webcomic being very similar to the Order of the Stick.
I could see that.
That.
It's actually a really pretty fun comic. I think Jason's thinking of this because our friend Jason Lumwitz brought over the board game, and we played the board game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I had seen the webcomic before that, and I looked it up after that, and I read a bunch. And I don't think I've read any since, but I would totally read more. It was good.
Yeah. You get it more if you play D&D, or if you have played D&D. But you don't need to have played D&D. It's just that there are in-jokes that you'll get.
There are a lot of D&D cliches.
Yeah. But it's entertaining in its own right, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, it's good. And there are dozens of D&D comics out there.
Well, and this is one of the best, there's a reason why, non-gamers read Penny Arcade.
Yeah.
And it's because it's so good, not all the time, but,
And it's pretty consistently entertaining.
Yeah. And there are just sometimes that, you will just bust out laughing at work and people think you're crazy. And then you'll point them to the comic and they'll bust out laughing.
Yeah. I have to
unbearable.
I have an admonition. I do not really like Penny Arcade.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's not
that's an
terrible.
Maybe that's just
yeah,
an admission.
Maybe admission? Yeah, okay, whatever. But I just don't. I don't think it's as great as everyone else does. And every time I get pointed to one of the comics that someone thinks is just so funny, it's kind of like, okay, this is great, I guess.
Well, it just now means that your opinion means nothing.
Yeah.
I do end up reading a lot of gaming-centered web comics, even though I don't game really at all. But yeah, there's that one. There's PvP,
which isn't really a gaming comic anymore.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, actually, on one of their recent podcasts, they talked about that Scott Kurtz admits that it's more of a relationship comedy now than a video gaming comic. And
a big, weird, blue creature.
Probably because now the writers have relationships.
It could be. Although he was married when he started the comic.
Yeah, their life suddenly
Oh, yeah.
Isn't all about gaming.
Yeah. Well, there was a recent...
And they're just going to find different things to write about.
There was a recent Penny Arcade where you had Gabe and Tycho sitting on a park bench talking about the fact that they both have kids, both have children, and who are, like, I think 2 or 3 now, the plot of it was that, it's like, we're dads, and that's kind of crazy, and, have to deal with things like, the monster under the bed and everything,
I forget the punchline, but it was pretty funny.
Yeah, well, basically it was one telling the other one that he's not allowed to babysit anymore. So even though Marty doesn't like it, now he's going to have to
laugh
this.
Even without having seen it.
See what else. There's another one called Control Alt Delete, which I kind of like, and something, I don't know, just a bunch of like gaming center comics that I end up reading. Dark Tower.
I love Dark Tower.
Full Frontal Nerdity, I think, is the other one.
I've read some Dark Tower. I can't really get into Dark Tower the way I have into others, but it's entertaining. Oh my god, I suppose I should catch up with Diesel Sweeties. I haven't read that in forever.
Did you see the interview that I, or not really an interview, presentation that I posted on Read Comics? The Diesel Sweeties guy?
No.
He did a talk at Google.
Oh, yes, yes, I did see that, yeah.
Yeah. He seemed rather full of himself, but also had a lot of interesting stuff to say.
Quite possibly with some, you know, reason. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say whether or not people should remain humble. I mean, Jerry and Mike, who do Penny Arcade, you know, I hear that they are still very humble and, you know, hey, yeah, play video games with us and everything. But, I mean, these are people who took a webcomic and started a convention, a foundation that makes millions of dollars in charitable donations every year.
Really?
A scholarship fund.
It's basically you donate money to buy video games for hospitals. And you can also donate video games and equipment. And they said, you know, the first year they did it, they, you know, it stuff fit in their garage.
Yeah.
And the second year, they had to rent storage because it would no longer fit in their garage.
And now
that's
it's
really cool.
Grown beyond that to the point where they now have a charity dinner where people get dressed up in tuxedos and stuff gets auctioned for, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000. Like, you know, getting your likeness used in a Penny Arcade comic, which goes for a couple grand, I think, that goes to this charity, and it is a multi-million dollar charity that all came out of a webcomic on video games.
Because I think that's something that's so rare in internet fame, is to parlay that into anything, either personally profitable or, you know, socially useful. And that just sounds amazing that they had the vision to do that.
They tapped a market, I guess.
Well, you know, it's interesting because webcomics really are one of the more... making a webcomic is one of the most straightforward ways to make money off of internet, you know.
Well, it is, but there's a lot of webcomics where success ends up killing it because of the whole bandwidth.
Well, and that's the... And I'm not saying that having a webcomic at all equates with success. I'm saying that... You know,
of all the many ways that it's difficult.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, I would much rather start a webcomic and try and make money off that than, say, starting a blog reviewing comics.
Well, indeed, indeed. In fact, as reviewers, we are scum that is supposed to be wiped off the bottom of your shoe. There's lots of...
stuff like glowing reviews.
I know. I think we're much more fans
we're
than
very
reviewers.
Lenient. Yeah, well, we review stuff that we like.
Yeah.
The stuff that we don't like, we don't tend to write about.
It's true.
And but
I'll occasionally write one.
There's just been a lot. Well, and I like to... I didn't do it with Life Sucks, but I like to think that with a review, there's nothing so good that you can't find something that could use improvement.
Sure.
And there's nothing so bad that you can't find something positive to say about it.
Yeah.
And there's just been a lot of stuff going on. And we talked about this the other night when we were down in the hot tub about reviewers, comic book reviewers, and creators. There's kind of a little tempest in a teapot going on right now where people are taking sides and there's manifestos being written about whether or not independent... creator-owned works should be reviewed by, well, virtually anybody. You know, that basically, you know, go ahead and review a Marvel or DC comic, but if it's something that someone has poured their heart and soul into, you have to be nice to them about it.
Well, but I mean, word of mouth.
What's that?
I kind of disagree. I think the only way anybody else is going to be able to read it, if that's the goal, is if, and since they have no budget, they're going to need word of mouth.
Well, exactly,
so,
exactly.
Well, and kind of, I feel just so indignant hearing that. I'm like, that is such bullshit. You know, like, oh, I can't say something bad about you because you don't make money off of it.
And yeah, I mean, if your goal is for other people to read it, that's part of, like, the risk versus reward, is that maybe there are going to be people who hate it.
Well, it's basically, you have creators.
It, you know?
You have creators who, you know, they've worked their tail off to put out this thing that is their baby, and it almost is kind of this whole thing where, who are you to criticize my work?
Uh-huh.
Well, but if you want your work to be read by anyone, and if you want any kind of critique that will help you eventually get it published and make money, then the dialogue's got to be out there.
And actually, there was another take on that, which I was kind of like thinking, okay, that makes a little bit more sense, is that if you are going to write a review, you know, you should be writing it for other consumers,
mm-hmm.
and not towards the creator of the work saying, here's what you did wrong.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah,
basically
I
frame
really
it in that,
that
this is my opinion on this work, and I'm writing this to help other people decide.
Avoid it like the plague.
Decide whether or not they should spend their money on it. And,
yeah.
But this is my opinion. But not actually say, yeah, this artist, he needs to learn how to draw boobs better.
I'm sure I think it's a legitimate comment to other consumers, too, but...
yeah, so...
Well, you know, and it does turn me off when I read reviews that are not like, this is what I read, this is what I did, and then, like, even, you know, you can say, I didn't think this part of the art was that good, but I hate it when, like, the reviews go, like, so-and-so sucks ass!
Yeah.
What the fuck do you think you're doing with this comic? Blah, 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 just, like, this vitriol, like, you know, even if you hated the comic, like, this just...
Unnecessary.
Yeah, intense, crazy...
But yeah, it's interesting.
Personal vendetta. Like, I wasted 10 minutes with this piece of work, you know, that kind
of
thing.
And, you know, ultimately it's a comic. And so many of them are coming out in the library that if you want to try it, to be honest, chances are you're going to be able to try it without buying anything. And if you like it, then you can go and buy it at the store. So I think people are getting a little oversensitive. And I think one of the reasons why they're getting oversensitive is because there are so many comic review blogs that are springing up like mushrooms.
Mm.
You know, that every week a new comic review blog or a music review blog or a...
Well, you know what mushrooms grow in.
Indeed. How very deep.
The internet is just shit.
Boy, we hate comic review blogs here.
So,
well, go ahead.
You guys ready to wind down?
Yes,
perhaps?
I think so.
Cool. I feel like I have not said much. What I've read is lots and lots and lots of Walking Dead and the Stars Rising comic that Mike lent me, which I would like to discuss when he's here, because he's the only other one who actually read it.
Rising Stars, you mean?
That's what I mean.
Stars,
yeah.
Rising
as
Stars.
I was thinking,
yes.
Stars Rising? What is this? Stars
no.
Oh, right.
It's Susie, it's written by Michael Straczynski.
Right, isn't that what you were reading at Wizard World?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I bought the first volume at Wizard World, and then Mike said, oh, hey, I have more of those at home, so I'm borrowing more of his. But I've just finished all the ones he had, which is not the end of the run, so now I need to figure out what to do next. But he had... I said that he wasn't as into the second arc, but I'm digging it. I agree that the first arc was much more inspiring, but I'm not done reading it by any means.
Uh-huh.
So perhaps the library will have more.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I went to the comic book shop maybe 2 weeks ago, and so I read a couple of single issues. I read the most recent Buffy, which I guess we really can't say anything about it because that would cause spoilers.
Yeah, but I read
it. Was good, and I loved it. And I felt smart figuring something out. And
yes, which I did not figure out because she is smarter than me.
And Echo, I read that.
It was so good. I really liked this last one.
Yeah, I definitely feel like we are building up to something, and
I
know what it appeared to be.
I'm very happy to have followed him to his next project, because Strangers in Paradise was amazing, and it really touched on some stuff that it really, you know, I really connected with at the time when I was younger, and I really felt like I got to grow with. But this is totally different in a lot of ways, and yet awesome for what I want to read right now. So, handy for me.
I also read his very first issue of Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane.
Oh, did that start?
Yeah, that started, and it feels like a first issue of an established series. And it was good, though. He doesn't do the art on that, so there's another artist who just does the script.
Really? That just...
That's funny, because I think it's kind of written... I feel like it's kind of drawn in his style. Do you agree with that? I feel like it's sort of drawn in his style.
Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane?
Yeah, do you agree?
The previous artist had a... There were some similarities, yeah. There was somebody I think draws women very well who is not a woman.
Yeah, no kidding.
There was something I read recently that had, like, two pages in it that were drawn by him. And I don't remember what it was now. It was...
His name is Terry Moore, right? Is that...
Yes.
I'm not crazy.
What was it that... It was some anniversary issue of something, and he had, like, two pages of his artwork in it, and now I can't remember what it was.
Well, there was, like, this was from years ago, though, of an issue of, like, Batgirl with...
No, this was...
With Oracle and the new Batgirl, and then the little flashback to when... Barbara was Batgirl, and I think that was done by him, or it might have been a couple, but it was only a couple of pages.
This was something that had lots of guest artists doing one or two pages, and he was one of the guest artists that did a couple of pages in it. I'll have to see if I can.
This is not what you're thinking of, but it's a similar compilation thing. The Dark Horse Presents came out last weekend, or last week.
Oh, yeah.
It's $20, so I kind of... And it's all stuff that you could read on MySpace.
Oh, it collects all the MySpace stuff?
It collects all the MySpace stuff.
Does it collect the Joss Whedon, what's it called?
Yeah.
Sugar Shop.
Yep, there's
really
a couple different things. Yeah, there's a couple different Joss Whedon things, I think. And there was also that big Goon thing.
It
was
Goon?
That's the only Goon I've read, and I dug it.
The Goon is good. It's fun. I like it.
I've seen it many times, but I've not picked it up.
Read all the trades that have come out. It's not one that I buy single issues for, but I am entertained by it quite a bit.
That is cool.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, Kyle's good. Like,
was good.
This one, yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, Susie.
Yes.
No problem.
And we will talk to you next time.
Yes.
On Read Comics.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.